Welcome to the podcast of America This Week, courtesy of the Catholic Channel on SiriusXM 129. If you want to listen to more, subscribe to SiriusXM and tune in on Wednesdays at 1 p.m. Eastern on the Catholic Channel, SiriusXM 129.
Good day and welcome to the broadcast and happy 2018. I'm Father Matt Malone, Editor-in-Chief of America Magazine.
And I'm Carrie Weber, Executive Editor at America. And each week we offer you the news and analysis from the intersection of the church and the world gathered by our team at America Media.
And one of the members of our team is here in studio with us, Zach Davis. Nice to have you with us.
Thank you, Father Matt. Nice to be with you, Carrie.
Good to be with you, Zach.
Thank you.
I appreciate it. And we should mention, as we always do when you're on the show, that you have an alternative audio personality.
I do.
Well, right. I suppose you're just yourself, but on another show.
You are not just a mild-mannered reporter at a great metropolitan magazine.
No, I'm also a podcast host for Jesuitical. But this is good because we are taking a bit of a break for the holidays, and so I haven't been in front of a microphone for a while, so I've been really itching to get back into the game.
You were going through withdrawal.
Yeah, exactly.
Right,
so.
Right. You're just sitting at home, like, talking to yourself.
Yep, exactly. Yeah. Roommates are starting to, like,
be concerned.
Shut themselves up in
right.
their rooms.
So if you listen to this episode and you think, what I need is more of Zach Davis, you can go on iTunes and you can download Jesuitical and you can catch up on the episodes.
That's
and then
right.
come back after their break and listen to their new episodes mm-hmm. starting next
Friday.
Okay.
Oh, okay, right. So this will be the first episode of 2018.
Yep.
Okay.
It's going to be a good one.
So yeah, you'll be able to start the new year off right.
Yes.
Yeah, and and people should tune in. And what are the adjectives we're using now to describe this?
So we're young, hip, and lay.
Okay.
So in the lay part means we aren't Jesuits, but we work with them.
Right.
That's the
He's
right.
on brand,
yep.
man.
Right.
Good job. Good job.
But we invite all good. Listeners, whether they are young or not, hip or not, or lay or not.
Okay.
So
yeah. No, people should definitely check it out, and it's one of the great initiatives of our young, hip, lay editors at America.
Speaking with support of young from the older, stodgier
and
ones
hip,
as well.
But maybe not lay, we're going to be joined later on by Brendan Bussey, who's one of our contributing writers.
He is. He is not lay because he is, in fact, a Jesuit. And he has, like most Jesuits, has degrees in a large number of things, theology, philosophy, literature. And he puts his studies and his writing to good use, talking about his first year of priesthood, which he is in the midst of right now. So it's a kind of unique time for him that he's going to talk to us about.
And some of our longtime readers will remember Brendan as the fellow that interviewed Andrew Garfield for, I think, for an issue 1 year ago this month.
That is correct.
Right?
Yeah, for the first issue of our newly redesigned magazine,
right.
which was a January issue. And he had a really fabulous, fabulous article that you can go back and take a look at americamagazine.org. Father Brendan Bussey, welcome to the show.
Hey, good afternoon. Thanks for having me.
Thank you for being here. We really appreciate it. So for folks who haven't read your piece yet, I like at the start that you start talking about the fact that being a priest was not something you sort of always felt called to. You say, never wanted to be a priest. As a kid, I wanted to be an architect. Can you tell us a little bit about the sort of evolution of your thinking in developing your vocation?
Oh, gosh.
In just like a minute or two.
In 280 characters.
So it's an easy thing to condense, right?
Right. I think the only thing I'd say about that is that it was very clearly a call that came from outside of myself. Like that if I have any confidence in the authenticity of my vocation, that it wasn't entirely my idea. That other people, God included, had a hand in forming how I saw myself, who I became, and that, I don't know, answering the vocation was somewhat like listening to what other people had to say about me and accepting that they might have some insight that was worth listening to and helpful and brought me closer to who I knew myself to be, I guess.
No, that makes sense. And it's kind of a beautiful way of how you seem to be approaching the first year of your priesthood as well, in listening to others and taking into account what they say and their experience.
Yeah, I think so. Like, that was a hard line to write because you say that, and then everyone in at the Lourdes Mission where I'm working now is like, so you didn't want to be a priest, huh? It's like, and it's not that I want to communicate that I'm not happy, joyful, and embracing the vocation, but it's a complicated dynamic, you know, that
Right.
Yeah, I love what I do, but that doesn't mean that I was the one who had the big idea how to do it or what it would look like. So the people, it's been funny to hear some of the reactions of folks in my parish that now have read this article and sort of cock their head to the side and ask me questions about it.
Right. I'm sure that that is interesting, because it's also a kind of, I certainly discovered in my first year, and that the most honest answer to when did you decide to become a priest was this morning, right? Or in the last hour, right? That it was constantly, it was unfolding, and it was an always unfolding reality, and always something new and different to learn and to appreciate and to be scandalized by, in the best sense of that word. So what else have you discovered through the course of this year that you shared with our readers?
Yeah. I like what you were just saying earlier about the sort of sensitivity to how the priesthood plays in all kinds of different places. Mm. So like stepping into ordained ministry gives you a different, I think, point of view on that. But it's the weird thing of like any time, like imagine a person gets married or somebody, they have a new child, and it's like all of a sudden everything's different. But then you look in the mirror and there's a lot of things that are still exactly the same. Like I'm not automatically the perfect idealized version of priest the next day, you know. So I think that's what in the article, looking back, part of the thing is they asked me to reflect on the first year of priesthood, and I'm only about 6 or 7 months into it. So there had to be, okay, we're going to have to count backwards a little bit. And then going right back to the experience working with refugees as a way in which there was something resonant about priesthood in that place. Now, being a volunteer in a refugee camp is not exclusive to the ordained ministry, but that kind of blurring of the lines, but then between what does it mean to be a priest of the priesthood of all people, and what does it mean to be then sort of publicly identified and consecrated as an ordained minister in the church? It's like this blurry, but then there's also this clear like marking, like identifier now, you know. So
right,
getting used to the Father Brendan thing is still something that's very awkward.
Right, you talk about that sense of being sort of set apart in a sense, in a way that is in some ways sort of edifying and in some ways isolating. Can you talk a bit about that?
Oh, sure. First, I think there's a lot of bad ways in which people read that or experience that or live that, right? To be set apart is to be set above or to be set somehow holier or purer or, I don't know, closer to God in some way, which is something that never makes sense to me, and that I do my best not to to sort of look at myself that way. But it is like to be set apart in a way that says, yeah, it's set apart in terms of finally accepting or claiming in public what that dynamic of what I was saying earlier. Other people seeing things in me that say, yeah, there's priesthood in this person. Sort of accepting that and being consecrated by the hands of the people in my life over many years and by God, God's work in my life, right? Sort of pushing me into a place and say, here's who you are in this community. And that's a really beautiful thing, kind of accepting parts of your identity and helping to name them. But then there's another way in which, because of, I don't know, the public nature of being ordained in a community, that now you are, it's kind of, I've been watching a lot of The Crown lately. It's like that you rise into a public
identity. Yeah.
That has very little to do, maybe, at least it seems at first, with who you actually are as a person. And people see priest, you know, and whatever they have in mind about what that means then suddenly gets put on you like a jacket that you may or may not like to wear.
Right. Yeah, that's got to be
tough.
Brendan, one of the lines you have is that being set apart causes this sense of loneliness, too. And you write that the loneliness of priesthood has less to do with celibacy, as many presume, and more to do with consecration. What did you mean by that? Because I think that's probably a common conception that many people in the pews have.
Yeah, I think part of that came from, so a lot of there's like 5 or 6 different elephants in the room writing this article, right? And so part of the thing is everyone has an opinion about what a priest should be or should do or should be allowed to do or who should be allowed to be priest and all these other questions. So one of those versions of that is whether or not priests should be celibate or not, and they presume that whatever's wrong with the priesthood, whatever they presume, perceive to be disordered with the priesthood or in need of renovation, has something to do with the strangeness of being unmarried or unpartnered, you know. And so, but my experience has not been, like I rarely experience loneliness for lack of other people. I mean, that's one of the things about being a priest is you're kind of always on call. You're surrounded by relationships. You're invited very intimately into people's lives in a way that's often surprising and humbling. And so my experiences of loneliness have not been by way of my celibacy, you know, at least at this point in my life. But there is this other kind of sense of feeling yourself now held, not at arm's length, but at a certain kind of distance because of who you are and who people are asking you to be. So, yeah, it's hard. It's a hard thing to describe, but I think consecration is a part of that, that people are now saying, you know, this is Father Brendan, and they're putting me into particular roles that I don't ask to be in. And because it's something that doesn't happen to a lot of people, like not a lot of, like a very small portion of the population is ordained into the Catholic priesthood, that it's not something you can say, oh yeah, everybody understands what this is like,
right?
Because so few people are doing it, you know?
Yeah.
So we've covered the lonely. We've covered some of the humbling. Let's talk about some of the joyful aspects of this. We know there's been times that have been tough. What have been some of the moments where you're like, oh my gosh, I can't believe that this is my life now. This is amazing. What a wonderful gift this has been. It's assuming you've had some of those, right?
Yeah, there've been a couple of those. Yeah. The humbling and lonely parts are there, yeah, you know, but they're by far superseded by the joyful ones, or else I don't think I'd be here, right?
Right, exactly.
But I don't know, I think part of it is this sort of the surprise of what we were saying earlier about that loneliness of being identified now in a way that you didn't previously identify yourself or were identified by other people, being kind of set apart. The flip side of that, which is really joyful, is just being surprised by some of the grace that that opens up, you know, of, you know, a person who I have never met sort of knocking on my door after a long life of waiting for some sort of healing or reconciliation, asking if I'm available for a confession, you know, and they just walk in the door and find in me and through me a kind of a place to put something they've been needing to put down for a long, long time. Like that for me is a very joyful thing because it's an interaction with another person, but also just so evidently clear that God is also becomes a part of that conversation. I think another version of that is the strangeness of walking into Mass and coming in like every time I've ever gone to Mass before, but then turning around and looking at everybody in the face, which is something I never did. And
yes.
I never walked into the church, just turned around to take a look at all the faces. But to see that from that perspective, I think, I don't know if I said it this way in the article or not, but it was definitely in my mind as I was writing, to look at the faces of people who are looking for God. I think I might have a line in there, something like that. Like, that is an incredibly beautiful thing to see. And in all that diversity, sometimes you see people that are happy to be there or singing. Other times you see in a person's face what appears to be some sort of struggle or suffering or prayer. But to be able to look at people's faces as they are quite literally looking for and looking to their God is an incredible, incredible privilege and brings me a depth of joy that is hard to articulate, but definitely joyful.
Yeah, I completely identify with what you just said because those were two things that also struck me in my first year. One, I remember having this very I had a persistent fear throughout my formation as a Jesuit, you know, that I was going to have to carry all of this darkness that I would experience through hearing people's confessions, and that would be a burden. And what I discovered in that first year is that the harder thing is not keeping people's sins secret. It's actually keeping their joy secret. because you experience, you know, joy is naturally generous, right? It wants to. You want to get up on the rooftops and shout out, "Hey, look at what God has done here! It's amazing, right?" But you can't talk about that either,
right? Right.
And that's actually the harder thing to carry. Yeah.
Oh, that's lovely. Yeah, I mean, I was an altar server when I was younger, and that was one of my favorite things is having that perspective. And there's so few times that people get that perspective if you aren't a member of the clergy, and it was just, especially at something like the Easter Vigil, with, you know, everyone's faces being kind of candle lit and just looking out and thinking, like, look at, you know, just the beauty of everyone being here together in this community. And then to be able, as a priest, to go deeper into that and those conversations and that relationship really just heightens that, I imagine.
Matt, one of the things I've heard you say is nothing you can learn in your formation can prepare you to hear confessions.
Right.
Brendan, has that been true in your experience in this first year?
Oh, yeah. I mean, there's a million ways in which I feel underprepared.
See, that's interesting because Jesuits have like a longer formation, right? Yeah,
10 years at least.
I thought that was because all the slow learners were in one order.
Right.
Yeah.
So you've experienced that too, Brendan, that sense of, wow, that, like, I mean, I learned a lot of stuff, and it's good to know the rules and all that stuff.
Right, yeah, you did have some knowledge prior to going into confession.
Right. There's a way in which you're not ever prepared,
Right. Yeah. I think a lot of the learning, the little things, I mean, you fixate on them because you imagine, like, if I can get the ribbons in the right place in the missal, then everything will be all right.
Right.
So you get really nervous about that, and you practice, or you try to figure it out, and then it all goes wrong anyway. But so much of... you can't be prepared because I think exactly the dynamic of sacramental life, and this I think is on all sides of it, not just from the priesthood, but if we're serious about how God's grace works into those symbols and sacraments and all those gestures and actions, then how could we possibly be prepared for it?
Right.
Right. Well, and what a privilege it is to be able to be there for somebody in that moment of grace, and what a privilege it is for the church to provide all of us for that opportunity for that grace. So it's every once in a while I get like really emotional over like the church has really thought about this, people. Like, we have set up these structures. We have set this up in place for exactly this time and exactly this moment so that you, when you have, you know, this burden on your heart, can go to any of these people and together as members of this community relieve yourself of that. And that's beautiful.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Whereas I've experienced this. A lot of my friends would wonder, like, why do we need priests in general? Why can't you go straight to God? Brendan, what would you say to them?
Oh, gosh. I think you can obviously go straight to God. I think God has ways of reaching the heart of every person. And as Jesuits, I think that's a presumption of ours always, is that when I walk into a room, I'm not bringing God with me into that place, but looking to recognize where it's already at work. So, there's obviously a sense of which God is already active in people's lives, and people from all sorts of traditions, and faith traditions, religious traditions, cultural traditions, have ways towards God that I myself and a lot of people could benefit from. You know, they have wisdom on how to get in touch with the holy. So, I don't claim any particular, I've got the keys now and everyone has to come to my office to find God or anything like that. But there is, I think what Carrie was just saying, you know, there is a real gift of a community of people who have varying levels of intimacy and knowledge of each other, right? So if we all knew each other and were good friends, then of course we would know, well, I can trust this person, I can go to that person. But to identify someone that for anybody in the community, no matter where they come from around the whole world, says, okay, here's a priest. You can talk to them. You can confess. You can go to them for the sacraments. Like identifying a person, I think that's a part of that consecration bit, right? That we consecrate people to this particular ministry is a gift because it opens up a place where I can go not only to God, but I can know that my community is somehow participating in that God relationship.
Yeah,
I think that's really important for people to know, is that our relationships never with God should never be private. Like I play a lot with that language of what it means to be personal, which is never exclusively private and never totally public. It's you could be personal in both kinds of places, but we need each other to do that. And I think God wants us to know that our need of each other is kind of important to this whole love business.
Yeah.
I can go directly to God. It just it's sort of a way of avoiding my responsibilities to other people and theirs to me.
Yeah, you can. And I also always say to folks, you know, I said, well, you can just go into a quiet room and be alone with God and talk to God. And they would say, well, then why do I need a priest? Why do I need confession? And I said, because walls don't actually talk to you, right? You know, and there's something about that I didn't really appreciate until I was doing sacramental ministry as a priest, that there's something about the sacramental economy of the church that really respects how human beings are wired to know things. And, you know, we all kind of, you spoke of love, you know, how many of us have either said or heard said, I know you love me, or I know he loves me, but you never say it, right? And we need to hear it. We need to actually hear the words, I love you. We need to hear the words, I forgive you. We need to hear the words, I'm here for you, right? It's not enough, right? You know, and the sacraments, which exist for us, not for God, right, are here to affect that.
To say that, yeah, exactly. Brendan, we just have like 2 minutes left, but quickly, I just want to say, have you had a lot of requests for the special first year extra power blessing? Is that the theological way to say it? That supposedly, right. Not supposedly, in the first year, can you tell me this briefly? The priest
kind of a pious tradition that said that a new priest, that his blessing is a special blessing.
Blessing.
I think in the day it might have been associated somehow with some kind of
money
indulgence
or something.
Like that.
I had some skepticism around, but if you offer me a first year blessing, I will take it. Have you had a lot of offers or requests for that?
Well, right around the ordination itself, there's all kinds of that. Everybody walking up. It still surprises me every once in a while. An old lady in the parish who I've never met will just sort of grab me by the hand and pull my hand to her lips and give me a big kiss on the hand. things like that, you know.
Well, that's a nice thing, anyway. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, the whole celibacy thing, I don't mind a kiss here and there.
That's right. Well, the piece is called The Urgent, Lonely, Relevant, Humbling, Joyful Experience of Being a Newly Ordained Priest. It's by Father Brendan Bussey, who is a contributing writer for America. Thank you so much for being with us, Brendan.
And thank you for having me. Yeah.
All right. And thanks for the peace. Take care. God bless.
You too. Happy New Year.
Yeah. That is, he's spot on. If I had written about my first year, I would have said the same exact thing, but not as well as he did. So people should check it out.
Well, that's why we have contributing writers.
AmericaMagazine.org, where they can also find all of the content that we have been talking about today. And they can follow us on Twitter and on Facebook. And to subscribe to America, you can call 1-800-627-9533. That's 1-800-627-9533 for a smart Catholic take on faith and culture for less than $1 a week.
That's right.
For Carrie Weber and for Zach Davis, I'm Father Matt Malone. Thank you. Happy New Year and good day.
Thank you for listening to the podcast of America This Week, courtesy of the Catholic Channel on SiriusXM 129. If you want to listen to more, subscribe to SiriusXM and tune in on Wednesdays at 1 p.m. Eastern on the Catholic Channel, SiriusXM 129.